Hey, you guys, Hart D. Fisher here, and what you're about to listen to is the very first Best of Heart Attack episode so that Josh and I could take a little break and spend some quality time with our families on Thanksgiving. So kick back, turn up the jams, and get ready for some classic interviews with Mike White, Dr. DeMars, who you may know as the mother of Ronda Rousey, and the very, very first episode of Heart Attack with Josh Hadley on his show, What the Fuck. So kick back, have a great holiday season, and thanks for listening. I'm Hart D. Fisher.
Seen their doctor. Dr. Death. He stalks the city through the dark of night.
I think somebody's coming toward my apartment.
He has powers more terrible than any man who ever lived. Don't answer your doorbell.
What do you want?
It may be Dr. Death making a house call. Rated R, restricted. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
All right, and now for our first segment of Heart Attack. Hart Fisher, when he was on a few weeks ago, made such an impact with you guys, I said, I gotta work with Hart again. Hopefully this is going to be a regular segment. We're calling it Heart Attack, and I have with me Hart D. Fisher. You there, Hart?
Is this where I'm supposed to speak now?
Yes. this would be
hey,
the part
guys,
where you
how
talk.
You doing out there?
We had a lot of inquiries about you, and as you told me before we started recording, you're blacklisted from Wikipedia. Can you give the audience a quick rundown of why you're blacklisted and why you're such a, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, dangerous personality?
I guess the issue is I am a threat to the status quo. I'm a creative person. I discover talent. And when I first got into business, I started my art career with Boneyard Press. And we were publishers of hardcore horror comic books. And I grew up reading Taboo and reading Heavy Metal Magazine and Epic Illustrated, EC Comics, horror movies. So when I wanted to make horror films or horror comic books, I wanted to leave an impact on people. So what I did is I made the books that I felt were not on the stands, that I felt people weren't writing, people weren't creating, they weren't going the distance. I don't like slap and tickle horror. I like horror that leaves scars in the back of your head that you can never get out. So I started my career with Boneyard Press, and we got into hot water pretty quick when I published an unauthorized biography of Jeffrey Dahmer. Serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer at the time was a big cause célèbre, and a lot of people jumped on the serial killer bandwagon around that time, and I got into trouble doing this book, and I got sued by the victims' families, and a lot of people came out and said I was a scumbag for doing what I do, for writing about serial killers, for writing horror stories. And I told them, no, I'm not a scumbag. I'm a good guy. I love horror. Horror is great. You can't put me down because you don't like my comic books. Go fuck yourself. And I really got in their face, and I didn't take any shit. And they didn't like that, didn't enjoy having their noses rubbed in the shit that they were doing. So they presented me as a scumbag, as a guy who's exploiting horror, and I'm damaging America's youth. And a lot of my work is banned in this country. A lot of the comics I've done. Well, why is a long question? I did a story for Danzig called The Taste of Cherry with Christian Moore, and it's banned in Oklahoma as obscene material. A lot of my work is banned in Canada. A lot of my work is banned around the world. I am the publisher of Michael Diana, the only cartoonist in America to go to jail for his artwork and be convicted of obscenity. I've done a lot of work with the First Amendment. I've put my guts on the line. I've had the police tell me to leave town all over comic books. And the thing is, I can't tell you why someone wants to ban a particular thing, because when you get into why someone wants to censor something, that's a personal thing. When you're involved in horror and you're doing horror things, what you'll find is your creations will touch a different nerve in each person. And when you get someone who wants to censor something, it's because the work touched something personal in their head. There's something in that censor's head that went, ow, don't touch me there, when they saw the movie. And they can't take it. They can't even take the idea that this even exists. It bothers them so much, the notion that it even exists, they can't sleep at night. Now, why that might be with each person, I don't fucking know. You'd have to do a psychology study of each one of these jackasses. But most of the time, it's about insecure people who are powerless in their lives, and they want to exercise power over you. Like when they try to say, oh, you can't use the word cunt. Oh, I'm white, so I can't say nigger. Well, fuck all y'all. I'll use whatever fucking word I want, motherfucker. I'll swear all I want. I am in control. They're trying to control you.
And you stood up for yourself. People, go out there and find his YouTube page. What's your YouTube account called?
Right now, the way to find all my talk show appearances, they're up at www.youtube.com/crimepaysheart. And that's H-A-R-T. As for why Wikipedia has decided to blacklist me, I think it's funny that they had their site go dark for a day as anti-censorship, yet they have elements within their company that have taken it upon themselves to blacklist my name and the name of my comic book company from Wikipedia. And they have literally told me I'm not relevant enough to have an entry. I mean, I'm fine to be on Larry King or Jerry Springer, to have Time Magazine write about me. Oh, but an entry on Wikipedia? Heavens, the Murgatroyd. No. Won't allow there to be an entry on me up there.
Which is absolute bullshit. But the reason I wanted to bring up your YouTube stuff is I especially want people to go watch your Sally Jesse Raphael appearance. Because you school the living shit out of her about talk show culture and the fact that she was clearly trying to manipulate you when you were on that show.
You know, what the people at home don't understand about these talk shows is, one, Oprah or whomever, they don't know anything about you when you get on that show. Those guys have these little cue cards, and the only thing they know about you is what's on that cue card. They don't know anything else. Nothing else. There's ringers in the audience. There are people that work for the talk show that are in the audience, and they lead the audience. Then when they edit it and they put it on the air, they remix it. When I was on Jerry Springer, I was winning the audience over to me, and they changed it. They turned down the audience applause for when I was winning, for when the show went on the air. They do lots of little tricks like that. So you're not getting any feel. Like reality TV, it's not real. It's manipulated. None of it is real. None of it. It's all fake and retaped and bullshit. None of that stuff on television is real.
Which is why I was really surprised when you were telling Sally Jesse she was basically a cascading thunder cunt. I'm surprised they left most of that in.
Well, I didn't call her a cascading thunder cunt. The whole reason they brought me on the show is they said that I was exploiting the victim's feelings and the victim's emotions to make a profit. And what I did is I turned around within a minute and a half of being on that show, and I said, Sally, the only reason these people are on this show right now is so you can hurt them, so they can cry on camera, so you could sell more orange juice. And Sally, they did a good job of fixing this for air, because she stood there, gobsmacked with her jaw in between her tits, just staring and And her reply finally was, when she got her shit together, was, I work for a corporation. It's different. Oh, really? Is it? And then after I destroyed Sally Jesse on her show, they dropped me from the Donahue show that I was supposed to be on the following week.
Because you were dangerous, and that's exactly why I want you on this
Correct.
Show. And I didn't mean to put words in your mouth there. I was saying that's basically what you were calling her, but you didn't say that. You were calling her out, so I didn't want to try and put words in your mouth.
But she's a hypocrite. Thunder cunt is nice, but the fact is she's a hypocrite.
When you were on Larry King, you look at Larry King's the only one that seemed to treat you fairly. You know, obviously I'm only seeing the edited version, but he was the only one that seemed to treat you like he respected you.
I was expecting to really be tangling with the tiger when I was on Larry King, but I will say that what you see on screen, what's on there on the YouTube, is exactly the way the interview went down. They didn't do any tricks. They didn't do any remixing. I was by myself in a studio in Los Angeles, so I'm just sitting in a room with a bright light in my face and a camera, almost like being interrogated, you know? And he was very, very fair. I was very surprised at how even-handed he was.
Well, that to me also shows the difference between an actual journalist, Larry King, and a mm-hmm. sensationalist like Jerry Springer or Sally Jesse.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And Jerry knows what he's up to. Jerry knows that he is a circus clown and that he's providing bread and circuses. I mean, you're talking about an ex-politician that got busted bouncing a city check on a hooker. What kind of an idiot writes a hooker a check? Oh, Jerry Springer does. That's right.
I'll always remember him as the masculine feminist from Married with Children.
Oh, yeah.
You forgot he was on that, huh?
Yeah, I did. I completely forgot he was even on that show.
That'll wrap up our first Heart Attack segment, but I just wanted people to get a little feel for who Hart Fisher is, and we want Hart back every week. Basically, what I want to do is give him 10 minutes to talk about whatever he wants on a weekly basis. That sound good to you, Hart?
Sounds like a plan to me, man.
At American Horrors, you can watch horror movies for free. All night and all day, 7 days a week at filmon.com. See William Shatner like you've never seen him before as a sociopathic killer in Impulse. Plus, watch the goriest Bigfoot movie ever made in Night of the Demon. Academy Award winner Cliff Robertson is slowly driven mad by the ghost of his dead wife in Dominique. New episodes of the best damn horror movie review show, Woody Mex, Fright Asylum. And the premiere of new series, Angela's Trailer Park. Plus music videos by Danzig, Children, and more. Be the first fiend on your block arrested for wearing the American Horrors Asshole Remover T-shirt. Only for monsters with big balls. Available for just $24.95 at AmericanHorrors.com.
Government gets overthrown. that's it. Coup d'etat. Give me a bomb. A Molotov. It's a coup d'etat. Generalissimo's the thumb chop. Step on a line, next on a block. Armies marching through the streets. Dressed or shot, dressed will need. Coup d'etat.
Push from the left and a shove from the right. It's all planned out. We'll do it tonight.
Push the president and his wife. We're hoping for a ransom or take their lives. Attack their embassy. They are our enemies. The president, they smoke cigars. Anyone he does not like.
And shoots or puts behind bars.
Coup d'etat! Coup d'etat! Go!
With me is Josh Hadley, and my guest this week is Dr. Anne Maria DeMars. You may know her as the mother of Ronda Rousey, the UFC's very first female champion. And I just know her as a really great person to work with and somebody I really respect. And I'll say it, I look up to you. You blow me away. And you know what, people at home, for my big mouth, the doc knows how to take the wind out of my sails. Believe me, she could shut me down with two sentences. That's something I like, too. I like being around people that that could shut the blowhard down a little bit. And the doc knows how to do that, don't you, doc?
Yes, and I like the idea of being looked up to by somebody who's 2 feet taller than me.
Yeah, right. No, I do. You blow my mind. The fact that you've kind of, in a way, reinvented judo due to your leg injury, which is, you know, necessity breeding innovation. And that's amazing. And then you and I got to work together on your Spirit Lake Games, which I think is fantastic. And then I came down and I got to interview you at Gompers Middle School. And why don't you tell my audience what you guys are doing with Gompers Judo?
Well, Gompers is a middle school in Watts. So anything that you think of as far as quality indicators for a community that's high, that should be high, Watts is low on, like academic achievement at the school, attendance, anything like that. Anything you think that they ought to be low on, they're high on, as in, you know, incidents with students bringing weapons to school or just everything. So it's a really high need school. And my daughter, Jennifer, who is the second of my four daughters, did her student teaching there. And while she was student teaching, the Jose Gonzalez, the teacher supervising her, said, you know, it'd be really great if we had an after-school program for the kids in martial arts, because it'd be really good for them. And your sister just won a medal in the Olympics. Do you think she might know someone who would volunteer here? So Jennifer asked Rhonda, and Rhonda said, I'll do it. So she just won a bronze medal in the Olympics. She was working, I think, three jobs to pay the bills, you know, all at minimum wage. And every Friday she would go down to Gompers and teach judo. And she did that for 2 years. And then as she had started doing MMA, her MMA career got to be bigger and bigger. And there were more and more times she couldn't go. So I'd substitute for her and teach judo when she couldn't make it. And then after, I think, 2 years, she said she wasn't going to be able to do it anymore, because then she was flying all over the place to do these interviews for Strike Force and compete. Rather than see the program go under, I took over. And so now it's me and my friend Richard Elizalde, who had also been at Tenri Dojo back in the day with me and Gokor. And so Blinky and I teach there, and it's terrific. It's the longest running after school program at Gompers. This is our fifth year. Everything is donated. The mats are donated. Our time is donated. We now have three teachers from LA Unified who come every Friday. So, you know, we kind of have official adult supervision. And it's nice because we had new mats donated this year. My mom, for her 80th birthday, my sister donated mats and a new crash pad in her name. So we're able to have, right now, we've limited the class to 16 kids. And then Jesse Moya from Moya Brandeis has given us some more mats, so we may be able to expand it to 20. So we could take as many kids as we could fit in on the mat. Every time we get new mats, we expand it. And then it really ticks me off that Rhonda, sometimes people say negative things about her because they saw something in the media. Oh, she said this on some TV show. She's a really good person. Not only did she volunteer here for free for 2 years, not only did she start the program, but there's a tournament in Kansas City, the AAU Judo Nationals, and she thought I should take some of the kids, and they really did not have the funds to fly to Kansas City, stay in a hotel for 2 or 3 days, you know, eat out for 2 or 3 days. So Rhonda came over to my house, donated literally the shirt off her back, took one of the hoodie she had from the Ultimate Fighter show, autographed that, autographed one of her shirts from when she was on the Pan Am Games. And then the folks from Armbar Nation, the fan site, they donated a bunch of shirts that said, you know, stuff like, you know, if it isn't done rowdy, it isn't done right, stuff like that. She autographed all them and they auctioned them off on eBay, and all the money went to sending the kids to this tournament. And then some gentleman had donated, I think, $400 so that we could send another kid. We still had just about enough to send four students plus one teacher. So Rhonda said, well, I'll kick another $500 of my own money, and then you can send five kids. So we're all leaving Thursday for Kansas City.
That's fantastic. That is what I'm talking about. That is the thing that, you know, everybody gets on Twitter and they talk about who cried or who said what about whose boobs. And it's all stuff that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. And then the thing that actually means something gets total short thrift.
Exactly. Yes, I get interviewed all the time. They're asking about, oh, what do I think about Rhonda fighting this person or that person, or how much did she cry? And nobody says, oh, and that's amazing that while she's in Bulgaria filming a movie and training twice a day for a fight.
Yeah.
Literally the day before she steps on the plane, she thinks to come over to your house and autograph all this stuff and give her own money to send these kids to a tournament that wouldn't have had a chance to go. Yeah, all that's, you're exactly right. All that stuff just kind of gets short shrift. It really kind of irks me.
They really talk about the wrong things. They really do. And they seem to want to talk about ridiculous stuff like, you know, who said what about who. When you're in a game where you're going to punch each other in the mouth and you're going to break each other's limbs, who gives a fuck what fucking words you fucking used, you fucking candy ass motherfucker? You know, and that's something I like about you, too. She's, folks at home, Dr. DeMars is very salt of the earth, very regular person, very straight ahead. You're very unlike most people I meet in California that people talk about granola eating hippie weirdos. You're really down to earth, and you're very problem solving orientated. Our society seems really geared towards complaining a problem to death instead of getting off our asses and fixing it.
Well, that's true. But I think you have to work within the constraints that you have. So, for example, with both the book that we wrote and the game, we're always kind of skirting the edge of what we can get away with. So, like the game, where, you know, it's used in schools. A lot of people buy it individually for, you know, their kids to play, but it's used in schools. So it's kind of right at that age where, for example, one math problem, they're dividing up the hunters into hunting parties, and there's eight people in a hunting party. And so we have a little graphic that shows that if you have 51 people, there's going to be three left over. It shows them all sorted out, and it shows the three guys in the that are left over don't get to go, going, yeah, this sucks. You know, the teacher's kind of, ah, well, I don't know. But, you know, they let it slide. So everywhere in there, if they kill an animal and it's dead, it can't be too bloody, you know, but – mm-hmm. But they're like, ah, you're shooting animals, ah, but they let it slide. So we're kind of constantly going on that edge of what's literally edgy, you know, what's fun for the kids, what's interesting, but what can we slip by the censors? And it's the same with the book. I mean, yeah, they took out all the swearing in it. There's still got a lot of smart-ass remarks left in there.
Yeah, because folks at home, this woman's a smart-ass and a half. And she's got an eye. You know, that's what I like. I like people with an eye. And when you get to the upper echelons and you're standing there and you're having a conversation with Gene LaBelle, then you find out the guy was a painter and he has artwork in his home that's actually pretty good. And you're hanging out with a guy like Benny the Jet, and you start talking with these people and you find out none of these people are dumb thugs. None of them. They're all so talented in so many ways. And so's like Rhonda. And how has been the effect of, like, there's starting to be more trash talk on Twitter and stuff? How does that affect your daughter? How does that affect her sister, her little sister?
The little one, I think Julie is very, very smart. And I think she just kind of looks at it all with a jaundiced eye. They don't know her. You know, everybody mm-hmm. has a backstory, and the kind of person that's willing to judge someone from the tiniest sliver of a fraction of their life they've seen probably is the person's opinion you want to be worried about.
Yeah, I definitely know. I mean, and hey, Rhonda's bitten my head off. I've shot off my big mouth and she bit my head off, which was fine. You know, I'm used to that when you got a big mouth. So, Doc, I'm really happy to hear that your daughter, your youngest daughter, is handling it pretty well, because you never really know what's going to happen to the family when the trash talk starts. I know that in my career, when the media came down on me, it affected my family in a big way.
Well, I think our whole family is, as you said, a group of strong women, and my husband being a strong man, I think we try very hard to live life by our own rules. And I don't mean that as in we go out and shoot people or anything, but that we're not too concerned about, oh, you should have this kind of house. You should have this kind of car. Oh, the ladies at the PTA should like you. You know, if they do, fine. If they don't, fine. I live here. I'm happy. So I think we have pretty thick skins, all of us, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, your husband definitely does. Dennis, he cracks me up because he's always got like a little – he's watching an amused smile on his face.
This will give you some insight into Dennis. Once when Rhonda was little, she was on the swim team and she was late coming out to swim practice because she was goofing off with her friends. And he tells me this, but he says, you know, I really wasn't bothered by it because there are some equations in topology that haven't been carried to their logical conclusion. And I was trying to solve those in my head while I was waiting for her. And I said, you know, dear, most people when the child's late coming out, they listen to the radio. But that's Dennis.
Yeah, that's funny. I was cracking up watching the documentary on Rhonda, and they were talking about her being on the swim team, and she had said something on Ultimate Fighter about how swimmers will shave their arms for that extra second, that extra edge to win. And I can remember doing that in high school for the big state meets. You know, I shaved – folks at home, I have shaved my legs and shaved my arms. And I've done all that. It was an interesting feminization experience. And on that note – Doc, tell us where people can get your book and find you on Twitter.
They can get the book anywhere online, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, the Black Belt Magazine site. And I think it should be available in stores pretty soon. But for right now, anywhere that books are sold online, you can find Winning on the Ground. And Twitter, I'm at Dr. Dr. Ann Maria. My company account is 7 Gen Games, the number 7 Gen Games. And my personal work account is Ann Maria Stats. And you can also check out thejuliagroup.com, and that's my company. And I have a blog there where I ramble on about stuff related to small business. Or drannmaria.blogspot.com is the business/judo of life, where I ramble on about judo and life and whatever I feel like that day.
Fantastic. Folks at home, definitely find her judo blog. It's very worth your while to read. Because I've talked a lot on this show about how you can use martial arts philosophies and martial arts training in your life, because a disciplined mind and a disciplined body, they go hand in hand. I'm Hart Fisher. You've been listening to Heart Attack. I'll talk to you guys next week.
To be free, one must give up a little part of oneself.
Go!
Sex is fun, fire beats back, I get up.
from the operation. I was bleeding down there. I was bleeding from the gash between my legs. It was my first day as a woman. Already that time of the month. 2 days later, the hole closed up, you know. The wound healed and I was left with a one-inch mound of flesh. Oh, where my penis used to be, where my vagina never was, it was a one-inch mound of flesh. With the scar running down it like a sideways grimace on an eyeless face. It was just a little buzz.
Listening to Heart Attack. I am Hart D. Fisher. With me is Josh Hadley. And we have our very first guest ever on Heart Attack. And I think it's pretty appropriate because we are truth tellers here on Heart Attack. We like to expose the injustices that the mainstream media would like to sweep under the carpet. With us today is a guy who has stood the test of time, a gentleman who has withstood fire to speak to his truths. And guess what? He unearthed the things about Tarantino in his day in the 90s involving the allegations that Reservoir Dogs was a ripoff of a foreign film called City on Fire. Now, go watch those films. Decide for yourself. Funniest thing, I think, is here we are. What is this? Mike White, introduce yourselves to the audience. And how many years has it been since you pulled that off? 20?
It has been 20 years, yeah. It was 93 when I first made the first cut of Who Do You Think You're Fooling, yeah. That was actually a short video, about 10 minutes long.
Oh, wow. Is that on YouTube? Can people still see that?
Yep, it's on YouTube, Vimeo. Yep, just go out and Google it. Yeah, I made it. Actually, I had to make it a couple times because the first time I made it was some really crappy video equipment. So redid it, and it looks a little bit better now.
Very cool, very cool. What is it like for you to be... It's 20 years later. It's hilarious. Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm dealing with my own 20-year anniversary. As we record this, you know, this is the 20th anniversary of me shooting my film, The Garbage Man. It's 20 years for me of it's not something to celebrate, but it's been on my mind, my girlfriend's murder. I've been interviewed for a documentary about the 90s, and it's something that I discussed. And here we are talking about Tarantino's plagiarism in the 90s, and now you nailed his girlfriend. I mean, how did you come across her work?
First off, I'd like to say I didn't nail her in in some senses of the word.
you didn't stick anything within her body. But then we know No. She's not about that. You know, she's a foot job girl because we know Quentin likes feet sex. Because, you know, one of the funny things, guys, is I've been in L.A. for a long time. And my favorite thing is I love to tour the gutter. All right. So I worked in the adult film industry. I know secrets, guys. I worked for Vivid. I worked for all the main names in adult. I worked in fetish. I worked doing fetish films. And one of the fetish stuff that I dealt with a lot was foot models and foot sex stuff. And guess who's a total goddamn foot freak? Yay. And that's OK. There's nothing wrong with that. Nope. You know, but I would think it'd get kind of boring, you know, for her, where you're just normally, you know, sex with your feet would get kind of dull.
Yeah, well, different strokes. Different,
as it is.
Different toes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about fallen arches.
Oh. Well, getting back to... speaking of this, you know, my friends were calling me last night. They knew I was going to do the Leanne Spider Baby body slam on Heart Attack. And they were all concerned that, you know, she's with Quentin and, you know, they might sue for slander because apparently they've been using Quentin Tarantino's PR team to fight this.
They are doing a lousy job.
Well, how can you? The story's too good. And the internet age is different. The internet age, I mean, for you, you must see a tremendous difference between when you did this expose the first time and doing it now in the tweet age.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, just... There were so few venues back then. I mean, thank goodness in a way for Chris Gore, because he was kind of my mouthpiece out there going around with the tape and, you know, the old VHS videotapes and mailing them around to different people and everything. And it wasn't until the New York Underground Film Festival when it really started to get some legs. And then with that, you had Miramax really starting to crack down on things. And Todd Rohal, the director of Starsky and Hutch and the Hangover films, he was one of the guys behind New York Underground. And I think, I won't say for sure, but I think he kind of saw an opportunity to parlay some of his fame or infamy at that time into maybe doing some stuff out in Hollywood.
Chris Gore is another brave guy who really went to bat for independent film throughout the 90s. And isn't he doing a TV show now?
I believe he's still on Attack of the Show, and then he's doing a whole bunch of stuff. It is really kind of tough to keep up with him. He's doing so many things.
I'm really happy for his success.
Yeah, speaking of fetishes, he's supposed to be doing a TV show or a web series called Fetishville, where it's all done with little dolls, and he's made all these miniature, like, bondage equipment and stuff. I funded it on Kickstarter a while ago, and it looks like it's going to be hilarious.
Mike, how did you finally get the information? Because you said you got it on your blog from an anonymous source. What did you do after that? How much investigation before you kind of went, ah, shit, I'm back in Tarantino's world?
Yeah, it was really funny because the guy who gave me the information, he was just like, oh, this is perfect for you. And he started talking about this girl, and I'd barely heard of her, to be honest. I had heard about her years ago when I was listening to the Rugmore radio podcast. They were slagging on this girl named Leanne, and just the way they were describing her, I had a really different picture in my head of who she was and what she was. I was like, okay, you know, yeah, this kind of makes sense. And yeah, all right, you know, thank you for this information. And I am all about, you know, exposing plagiarists and everything. Guy who I'm talking to is like, oh, you should call it. Who does your girlfriend think she's fooling? And I'm just like, yeah, okay, I guess I get that. And then finally, I'm doing research. I'm like, oh, she's Tarantino's girlfriend. Now I get it. It took a little while for the light bulb to go off. But I mean, honestly, I think I got the call at 10 o'clock on Friday night. And by what, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning is when I hit, you know, publish on the blog, because I had two really solid examples. So, yeah, we're only just a few days out from it.
And it's just, you know, this is exactly how it blew up for me, too, when I discovered that Gerard Way and My Chemical Romance were plagiarizing my themes and my images, and they were rearranging my poetry for their lyrics. That I found out because I heard the fucking Black Parade on the radio. And at first I had a conniption in my car, pulled over off the 101, beat the shit out of my dashboard, was flipping the fuck out. Then I got home and I found out, oh, Gerard Way, Gerard? Oh, that's fucking Gary. That's Gary Way. Oh, my God. My kid, my intern. Holy shit. He worked for me when he was 15. Fuck. Then you realize, oh, wait a minute. And I started to do my research, and I'm like, you get this sinking feeling like, oh, no, I'm not going to get to celebrate this kid's victories. He's fucking ripping me off. Oh, no. Oh, it's getting worse from album to album. And I saw the same pattern with Leanne Spider Baby. The further along she got, the more confident she felt about not getting caught, and she just pushed it further and got lazier with the ripoff. And I found the same with this Rock Jack off. It was the same kind of thing, and I had the same experience where I just wrote a blog on my blog, like my regular old Live Journal bullshit blog that had a couple readers. And next thing I know, in a couple of days, I'm on RollingStone.com. It's weird how this internet age just instantly blows it up now. It ain't like before where you'd have a slow rollout and then a news company would come and your local CBS affiliate knocks on your door, right?
Yeah, it's so different. I mean, before it was all such word of mouth and, you know, maybe somebody mentions it to somebody else. And really, like, these were the tape trading days. And my stuff ended up on some VHS tapes that would get traded amongst people. And it's like, okay, that's how folks knew about it. So it's weird because still people are like, oh, you're the guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, you've taken some backlash over this, Mike.
How has it affected your career? Yeah, this is really it, man. What has happened like backlash? Did you ever lose a job or anything?
Not that I'm aware of.
I lost the job because of that fucking kid's plagiarism, because he lied about working for me, and he lied. This asshole went to the press and said, if only somebody had believed in me when I was a kid and published my comics when I was a kid, maybe things would be different for me. And wow. I'm like, you motherfucker, I published your work when you were 15. You lying. How could you put that into interviews? And so I was up for a directing gig, and, you know, you want to show that you're a tastemaker, that you can develop talent. So when I had found out that this kid, you know, had gone on and did this stuff, I'm like, yeah, he worked for me, he did this, this, and this. And they checked, and there was nothing. He lied about everything. So they thought I was a liar, and they didn't want to work with a liar. So I lost the job when I really needed it to help pay for my fucking wife's medical bills. So if some people wonder why I get so angry over plagiarism, if why I think Chris Alexander at Fangoria is a fucking asshat for defending this person's thievery that hurt real creators that should have got money, because it's goddamn personal for me, motherfuckers. Alexander at Fango, you're a piece of shit, you motherfucker. How can you dare apologize for this fucking stealing skirt who's done nothing but climb the ladder with her goddamn coups? She's a talentless hack piece of shit, and you're protecting her? Give me a fucking break, you fucking asshat. And your customers that buy your magazine expect you as a fucking editor to do your goddamn due diligence and make sure these fucking people are really writing their own goddamn articles. You funded a criminal, you asshole. You enabled her to hurt other artists. Did you reach out? Did you hire any of these other critics that she fucking injured their work? Did you, you fucking asshole?
All right, calm down. Hart, calm down.
Sorry, guys. There's a reason why this is a heart attack. And this is a little personal for me because these people have injured my business. They have gone out of their way to hurt my business. And they have gone out of their way to hide it from fans. And that really pisses me off.
But we've got Mike, and I want to utilize
Sorry, Mike. I get going, man, and I'm just on my first cup of coffee.
Wow, that's great.
Do you think this will, because I think you've proven on multiple occasions that you're an actual film journalist.
Yeah, dude.
Do you think this will actually help you get jobs, or do you think, no, let's just for the sake of argument say Tarantino stands by her. Do you think the fear of Tarantino backlash is going to cost you jobs in the future?
No, I just, you know, I was just saying to somebody yesterday, it's like the real shame of this is that I don't know how to parlay this kind of flash in the pan success, quote unquote, into anything. You know, I'm not this kind of opportunist like I believe Leanne might be. But yeah, I'm not one of these like social climbers where it's just like, oh, and I'm not going to go out there and tout myself as like, I'm the guy that broke this story. Because really, I was more just a conduit of other people who had actually done the initial research and saw these similarities and everything. So it's like, okay, yeah, I posted on my blog. That's cool, you know, and hopefully I did a good job with that and got the information out there and presented it in a way that makes sense for people and everything. But, you know, I'm not going to go out there and start trumpeting my name of like, I'm the guy that broke the story and I'm super important. Bah, bah, bah. So, I mean, I don't think, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this whole thing, either the first round with Tarantino or this one, ever cost me anything. It's not like I really go after that much stuff. I'm much more of a DIY person, you know.
Are you in Los Angeles?
No, I'm in Detroit.
Well, then fuck. No wonder you don't give a fuck, dude. I'm from Chicago, and yeah. I've done a lot of conventions in Detroit. It's great that you're in Detroit and you're doing this because, you know, I'll tell you, being in Hollywood is the kind of town that it kind of turns you into that guy, because when you're dealing with people, you got to give them a reason why they should talk to you right away. They really kind of wear that, well, who the fuck are you? Why do I need to talk to you kind of thing? And it's really nonstop in this town. And I have felt myself slide into that. Well, I'm Hart D. Fisher. La, 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 la. Let me tell you, I'm Hart. I got a radio show. Du, 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 du. I find myself falling into that trap, man. It's fucking, I kick myself when I hear it.
Tarantino, I don't know if he recognized your name when he first read about this.
Fuck yeah, he did, dude.
I think it would be funny if he'd be like, oh, fucking Mike White again.
He did. I bet you he did. I bet you he's like, motherfucker. Come on, Josh. You're getting a longevity. Isn't there like some insects that bother you? I'm sure he refers to Mike as like this asshole instead of going, well, I did what I did. I better be responsible for my own actions. How about that one? Like, I love how they, you know, this Leanne Spider cunt did the same fucking thing that Gerard Jackass My Chemical Jagoff did when their toe got caught in the ringer and the press came calling. Or I would love to thank, I've always wanted to thank Hart, but I wanted to do it in person. Well, you recorded your ripoff album in my neighborhood, you asshole. You could have come over. I live in a public area. This Leanne Spider baby was like, I want to apologize to these people myself, so please leave me alone. What do you think of this letter-writing campaign she pulled where she's writing these letters to journalists going, please don't pick on me and write about my crimes? Because it's a crime, guys. She's a fucking criminal.
Yeah, that was funny getting those emails. I mean, there was a twinge, just a twinge for just like a hot second where I was like, well, and then I was like, no, that's... And I had written back to her after the first one because she was just, it was a really weird email that she had sent me where it was like a couple paragraphs had been repeated. Like she was just doing a copy and paste job and hit control V a couple too many times. And I was like, that's what got you in trouble in the first place, honey. The thing that got me was, you know, she was like, oh, I've been getting these death threats and da 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 da. And I'm just like, how is getting death threats leading to you going out and purposefully stealing material from other people? That makes no sense.
And
then
know,
so I was just like, no, I don't think so. And then also at the time it was pretty much limited to like myself and one of the writers who had actually been ripped off, and so we had our stuff, and as far as I know nobody else had really done anything. I wasn't aware of the groups that were going on, the different forums that it started up about these, or, you know, the postings on those. And I was like, well, right now it's contained, you know, it's just in a couple places. So if I take it down, it's just going to be more questions. Why did this disappear? Because that seemed to be your MO, was taking down stuff. And it's like, no, I think it's actually better for you in the long run if it just is in a couple places. Maybe you can control it or something. You know, it's just taking it down would be pouring gasoline on a fire.
And then LA Times got it.
Yeah, LA Times. And really, it was Gawker that got it going when they
went
out with theirs. Yeah.
I read the Gawker article. That's the first one that I saw. And also the lady, the woman, what's her name? The critic that got ripped off in the latest thing.
Mary Ann from Flick Philosopher.
Yes.
Yeah, Mary Ann from Flick Philosopher. I saw her article and I read hers. And then I think you sent me the Gawker one, Josh. And the funny thing about this is, who the fuck is sending Leanne Spider cunt fucking death threats? Are you kidding me? She plagiarized the review. It's no one's threatening her with death. No one is stalking her. No one is outside her door. Because you know what, folks? I dealt with real goddamn stalkers. I had real death threats from fucking ex-cons and weirdos. So I hate when people are like, I got one email that said they're going to kill me. I'm getting death threats. Go fuck yourself. That's not real. Wait till somebody's outside your house watching you, you asshole. So, Leanne, quit trying to play the victim. Oh, I'm so scared now. People are saying mean things about me on the internet because I ripped off a bunch of people that don't get paid for their work in a time when America really needs jobs and money. Why wouldn't people understand? I'm just stealing for myself.
And then parlaying her fame into a full-fledged career, you know?
Well, you know what I think?
I wonder if Chiller, because she's been picked up as the new on-air host for the Chiller TV network.
Now,
I wonder if they're going to dump her ass quick.
They're going to dump her ass quick really bad, because I just got notified from a person, a friend of mine, that was having a meeting with a major studio. I'm not going to say what studio, but they are trying to cast their films based on how many Twitter followers you have. That is how lost these fucking studios are.
Wow.
Yeah, that's real shit. That just came out of a meeting last week with actually two friends of mine at two different companies told me about this, that these geniuses want to cast by how many Twitter followers you got. Now, Leanne here is acting as if what she's doing is so creative. Let's get back to what she does. She has no talent, guys, and this book that she built a career. No, she didn't build a career. She fucked her way to a career. She wouldn't have that book deal at St. Martin's Press if she didn't fuck her way up the ladder. Because we know, oh boy, St. Martin's Press can't wait to put out a book of criticism. That's a big seller. They're not trying to court Quentin at all. Because she's been talking about printing that that Grindhouse girls bullshit. She's been pushing that book for like 3 or 4 fucking years that it's supposed to come out. And finally, she ends up being this guy's girlfriend. And all of a sudden, her career takes off. Let's call a spade a spade. This woman is a non-talent that has screwed her way up the ladder, has gossip-mongered her way through the magazines to the point where, I'm not kidding, man, there are these namby-pamby people out there that are trying to figure out, I've still got a friend at Fango. I can't give you the dirt of what they did to me. I can't talk about what they did to me because I'm afraid of a backlash. Well, you know what, guys? More people listen to this fucking show than read that rag. All right, that rag is dying, guys. It's a brand that's dying. It has no power. They can't blacklist you. They can't get you fired off your job. They try. This woman tried. I have actor friends that she really worked hard to hurt them, and they're afraid to come on. They're afraid to speak out about this, and I'm going to keep working on them to try to expose this kind of shit. Have you seen anything happen to in your time as journalist and you're doing this stuff, Mike, have you seen like it come back on you where an editor's like, I don't know if your flavor's right for our magazine?
Oh, I've definitely had that. I've had, different magazines tell me that I'm way too highbrow and then others tell me I'm way too lowbrow. I have yet to find that perfect middle brow magazine.
Do you make a living with what you write?
No, definitely not. I've made a living just via, or, you know, as much of a living as I can, doing the 40-hour job, you know, doing the regular jobby job type job since, like, you know, I graduated from college. I've gotten paid a couple bucks for reviews here and there, and then it wasn't until, like, oh, God, 2007 until I finally got a paying gig, and that was all of, like, $5 a review. So never have made money on stuff. And when it came to Cashiers du Cinema, the zine that I've been doing since 94, I mean, that doesn't make any money either. You know, I still have boxes and boxes of issues out in the garage that are just kind of moldering there because, you know, print and went and died on me and nobody let me know.
I don't think print is dead. And in fact, I really believe print is coming back, especially in the face of all the spying that's going on. If you truly want to have a private life, folks, you're going to have to go back to cash. You're going to have to get your $20 bill and go get your book on the Secret War at the bookstore. That's the only way you're going to have any privacy anymore, guys, because it's gone. They are spying on everything we do. And we're seeing this here. You talk about Leanne's MO in the past has been that these articles would just disappear off the net, right, Mike?
Right, yeah. I mean, as soon as I, you know, when I heard about this initially, most of it was being pointed towards her column that she had at fearnet.com, and everything had been taken down. Luckily, there's Google Cache out there, so you can go back and see what was there. Then as more things came out, it was, you know, oh, well, she took parts from here and parts from there. And then you could see, you know, her stuff was still out there in print and you could go back and double check some of the stuff. So yay again for print. But yeah, she was just taking down everything she possibly could. Yesterday, her Rondo Award winning YouTube channel, all the videos from that disappeared. So
What's the Rondo Award-winning YouTube channel? What do you mean? She has a YouTube channel?
Yeah, she does this show called Fright Bites.
Oh, that's right! Fright Bites! Funny thing about motherfucking Fright Bites, Mike. Here's something personal for you. I was working on putting together an app for American Horrors, and it was called Bite-Sized Reviews, and I was going to do this with Tom Carnell, a writer at Fangoria, and I was talking to another editor at Fangoria about doing this. I'm not going to name him because I don't feel like it. I was working on this, and this was years ago, and this was on the AmericanHorrors.com page, and we were putting it together, and the guys knew about it, and the Fango people knew about it, and it was Bite-Sized Reviews. Guess what happens? Next thing you know, Leanne Spiderbaby, who, yes, hates my guts too, has a review show called Fright Bites. Gosh. We're going to go to break.
Heart Attack is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.